Welcome to the Behavioral Health Collective podcast, a community of behavior analysts who are passionate about sharing evidence-based practices from the perspective of behavior science. We connect families and educators to information that promotes robust behavioral health in the home, community, and classroom. We are behavioral health practitioners who empower parents and caregivers by sharing behavioral resources that are current and evidence-based. At the Behavioral Health Collective, we set families and educators up for success by promoting meaningful and lasting behavioral health and skill development in the children or young people they work with. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Erica Ng, the founder of the Behavioral Health Collective. Do you ever wonder why as humans we do the things we do? Why is it so hard to get a workout routine going, but easy to make a habit of going for happy hour with colleagues after work? Why is it so hard to create a meal prep routine, but really easy to create a takeout habit on Fridays? The science of human behavior is all around us, every day and every moment of our lives. While yes, there certainly are complex factors in why we do what we do, there are also some simple principles of behavior that apply to all of us on a regular basis. It's these same principles that help us build a new habit, create a new routine with our families, or teach students a new skill, but also to slowly give up on a healthy habit, continue an unhealthy habit, or create coercive cycles in our families. Today, board-certified behavior analyst Caitlin Ball will be joining me to discuss behavior science in everyday life, in a lot of these examples just mentioned. She's really excited about sharing behavior science in a way that's relatable for people on a daily basis, and she's so enthusiastic to share more about the ways behavior analysis is being applied outside of the field of autism. If you ever wondered why you seem like you might fall into certain habits or out of others, or why we do what we do, Caitlin will certainly be sharing with us more about those basic principles of behavior science that underpin those day-to-day behaviors. This episode is a great primer if you're totally new to learning about behavior analysis, but also good for anyone who's been following the podcast for a while and maybe wants to know more about the basics of behavior analysis. So I hope you enjoyed the show. Would love to hear some feedback. And here is Caitlin Ball, behavior analyst.
Good morning, Caitlin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Erica?
Great. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've really been looking forward to this conversation because I think since you mentioned it, I think it's having a nice general topic for people to really dig into everyday ABA is super exciting. So thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I'm able to share this topic with everyone.
Yeah, I'm really hoping this episode will kind of serve as a nice primer or intro to behavior analysis for people. So much appreciated. Yeah. So without further ado, let's get into the questions, I suppose. So I think just for starters, so listeners can kind of understand who you are a little bit and give some context, could you just share about what you currently do as a behavior analyst, and then also how you got interested in behavior analysis and what it looks like in everyday life specifically, and kind of what about that hooked you in?
Yeah, sure. So I currently have a private practice as a behavior analyst, a board certified behavior analyst, and I work on teaching social, academic, life skills, general adaptive behaviors to my clients through various forms. So sometimes I work with them one-on-one, sometimes I'm supervising therapy teams, providing parent coaching, or coaching to teachers in school settings. And the vast majority of my clients are on the spectrum, but a lot of them also have secondary diagnoses. So ADHD, anxiety, or some other various language processing disorders are the most common ones. In terms of how I became interested in behavior analysis, I would say it really started before I knew the field even existed. So analyzing behavior just sort of came naturally to me throughout my teen years and young adult life, you know, specifically with how it fits into social relationships. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wasn't creating activity routines as a child. That was not my forte at all, but I did really use it in order to navigate the social world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just like everyone else, I was trying to predict what other people were doing, what was motivating them to do what they were doing. You know, if it's a bullying situation, figuring out what's reinforcing their behavior and how can I not do that? You know, if it's avoiding a conflict with a friend, figuring out what is triggering this conflict and how can I change the environment so that conflict doesn't need to occur, mm-hmm. right? And adjusting my behavior in order to, you know, make for better social relationships with people. And, you know, also noticing that if I'm acting inappropriate in a certain context, why did I do that? Why did I suddenly do this thing that doesn't meet my values? And how can I change the environment and change my own behavior system? So that's sort of how I really got into it. Just asking why trying to see what was going on, and then testing my theories. So if I thought I found a system that was going to work, I would test it out. And if it worked and reduced that conflict, I was like, oh, cool. That's totally all they needed. They just needed reinforcement in this way. Or, you know, if I remove this type of trigger for them, then that's not going to come up anymore. So that's sort of how I got interested in it initially. But in terms of actually knowing what behavior analysis was, that started in my undergrad career. So I got a job at a summer camp working one-to-one with a child with autism. And initially there wasn't a ton of behavior analysis, although there was a psychologist supervising. I just got very general strategies to work with this kid, but it clicked very quickly. And then, you know, summer after summer, as I continued to work with this client, I got sort of more and more behavioral strategies added on. And I got to understand the analysis component of it. And I was able to start analyzing those behaviors and figure out, you know, how can I best support this person by changing some of these small environmental things around us, or practicing things in a certain way so that he learns them in a new way. So yeah, that really sort of got me into it. And then I ended up changing career paths. Really, I was going to be at the age of 20, I decided that I was going to be a child psychologist. But, you know, as soon as I started working with kids with autism, I was just like, you know, behavior analysis just makes so much sense to me. And I sort of fell in love with it right away.
That's incredible, because it sounds like you were thinking like a behavior analyst. Like, those are great examples from your childhood. So you're thinking like a behavior analyst at a very early age, which is amazing. So you found your calling, certainly. That's very cool. And I love those examples of social situations and how behavior analysis applies to all of us in everyday life. So especially socially, that's very applicable. So
I think it really sort of just weaves into every part of life. And I think it helps, at least for me in my experience, behavior analysis makes me a more compassionate person overall. If you can always think that there's a good reason why someone does something, it's a lot easier to be empathetic with them.
That is such a valuable point. Yeah, absolutely. So thinking about how we understand behavior and, you know, thinking about some of your examples there, how our behavior is established by what's going on in our environment and our interactions there. Let's start with the basics so listeners can kind of understand that. So how do we as humans build new habits or behaviors? And what are some principles that are at play in habit or skill development of some sort, kind of in our everyday lives? What are some ways we can kind of perceive that around us?
Yeah, so there's so many different layers to that, but I will start off with sort of the three main pillars that, you know, most people will talk about when they refer to behavior analysis. Anytime that we are looking at a behavior and we're analyzing it and deciding how to predict it, there's three main components. So we have our antecedent, which happens before the behavior. We have the behavior itself, which, you know, should always be really well defined in order to make sure that's what's actually changing. And then the consequence. So this is what happens afterwards that either makes the behavior more likely to occur in the future or less likely to occur in the future. So for the listeners that are less familiar with behavior analysis, I'll use the example of answering a phone call, right? So you have your antecedent, which is the phone ringing or vibrating, and then you have a number pop up on the screen. Let's say it's your best friend. So you see the antecedent, your behavior is likely that you're going to answer it. And the consequence is that you have a really nice chat, you get some more information from them, maybe you're laughing a little bit, and that makes you more likely to answer the phone call when their number shows up. Right. So that's one of those things where we're always answering phones. You know, behavior principles are always at play. Other components that are really important to consider using that same example is that the consequences really do shape the behavior. And that's something we always have to think about when we're forming habits, because it's going to change our behavior, whether we know it or not. For example, I used to answer my phone all the time, regardless of what the number was. I was always answering it about, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. But then over time, I started getting all these calls saying that, you know, I was going to be arrested because of like CRA issues. Yes. And it was always a scam call. And I was getting like 4 a day.
Oh, yeah.
And
I remember that.
It really punished my behavior. It was a really awful experience. And every time I was rolling my eyes afterwards, I was just like, it is not worth picking up my phone to an unknown number. So it changed my behavior. So now we have a bit of what we would refer to as discrimination training, where, you know, if it's a familiar number, I answer. If it's an unfamiliar number, I don't answer, right? This can apply to any routine in your day, whether it's answering the phone or answering the doorbell or, you know, talking to a specific person in real life, it always applies. One thing that I think is particularly important in habit formation, which sometimes we don't always talk about, is setting events. So although we have the three main antecedent behavior consequences, we always have these things called setting events that really need to be considered. And I think for habit formation, it's the setting events that when we don't take them into account can make a habit fall apart, right? Because yeah, there's constantly things changing that make our reinforcement more or less valuable. With a phone call, for example, I don't answer unknown numbers, but if the conditions change, the conditions or setting events are things that aren't necessarily happening immediately before the behavior, right? There are other things happening in your life that contribute to the value. If I'm expecting a package from Amazon, suddenly the antecedent of an unknown number, I'm answering it all the time.
Right.
You know, I might answer seven unknown numbers that day because I'm expecting a package. It's totally changed my behavior for unknown numbers. And likewise, you know, if I'm feeling really sick, if I didn't get a lot of sleep and I see my friend's phone number pop up and we always have an hour conversation, I might not answer because I don't have the energy for it. So the antecedent is the same. The consequence would be the same, but it's not as valuable anymore.
Right. Those are really great, relatable examples in everyday life.
It's just, and you can apply it to anything. You know, I always recommend anyone listening to this to then try and see if you can fit those four terms into anything going on in your life, because it it really does apply to each scenario.
Absolutely. And I like that you mentioned there as well about, you know, you use the term consequence, but you gave both like what would be perceived as positive and negative. So when we talk about consequences, we're not necessarily talking about, you know, that colloquial way of a parent may say, like, I'm going to give you a consequence to their child, and it always means a negative thing. You gave that great example of a consequence being a really nice conversation with your best friend can also be an outcome, you know, whatever follows the behavior. So again, we're using a technical term of consequence. So thank you for those, you know, giving examples on both sides there. So what about losing? Well, I guess you did kind of give an example there, but if we're going to drop a behavior habit, or why do we lose habits that maybe we are kind of on a roll with and we've been able to establish a little bit? Why does it seem like we once were motivated to do something and we've tried and tried to make it a habit, but then it falls apart? What are some factors at play, I guess, behaviorally that that happens?
Yeah, great question. So this is something that everyone struggles with, you know, if we were able to keep every good habit we ever created, we would be superheroes.
Yeah.
Right. You know, just the most productive, the most social, the most driven, but we're not. Most of us aren't. There are some select few brilliant minds out there that are able to do all these different things, but usually something falls apart at some point. So I talked a bit about setting events and how that can really contribute to behavior maintaining or falling apart if you're not considering it. But those four terms that I mentioned before are still just sort of like the skeleton of behavior. And there's a lot of other things that we need to focus on with the behavior piece. And that has a lot of different layers, you know. So if we want to create a habit that is sustainable, we really need to make sure that, one, did we define the behavior properly? So, you know, if you want to do a workout routine, which I think is one of those habits all of us are picking up and putting back down over time, it's great to have that well-defined. What is a workout for you? Is it 20 minutes? Is it 60 minutes? Is it running? Is it lifting weights? Is it going on a hike? Is it rock climbing, right? There's 101 different ways to do it, but it needs to be well-defined, and you need to get there slowly. And you need to make sure that you're building on success. So going back to the skeleton of having reinforcement, if you accomplish your goal and you're someone who gets that little endorphin rush or gets that serotonin hit from saying, I did it, right? And you are able to check it off your list, you know, checking things off are really reinforcing for me.
Yes, me as well.
If you're able to do that every single time, then you're more likely to do it the next time, right?
Yeah.
Because the reinforcement of accomplishment and the reinforcement of checking it off your list and saying, I did it, and then telling other people that you did it, and whatever reinforcement system you have, you're meeting it. So it's important to start small with habits and build on success, and only build when you're prepared for that next step. You know, if I start off with a routine to run an hour every day after never running, that is not a habit I'm going to form Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just not. It's going to be a really uncomfortable experience for one. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to meet the reinforcement of feeling accomplished, checking it off my list. It's not going to mm-hmm. happen. So start small, find out what's manageable for you, and then continue to build on that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Like, I like that you mm-hmm. mentioned the setting events earlier and thinking about that, you know, what makes it more valuable or not to succeed mm-hmm. and make that reinforcement or those consequences more or less valuable. But then also thinking about, am I putting reinforcement into my routine? Am I meeting that reinforcement, like you said, yeah. or am I falling short and then it's not reinforcing? Or am I choosing something that I think is reinforcing to myself, but yes. if it's not helping you form that habit, then maybe it's not actually reinforcing. So I think those are yes. yeah, great examples that you brought up.
Yeah. And what's reinforcing for one person is going to be so different for right. someone else, right? Yeah. You know, I, for one, you know, something that keeps me motivated to work out is if I have a buddy system, and whether it's on Zoom or in person, mm-hmm. I get a 15-minute chat with that person that I really enjoy spending time with at the end mm-hmm. of the workout. And that's really valuable to me. But for other people, they may really not like doing that. They're exhausted mm-hmm. at the end of a workout. They do not have the resources to talk to someone, and that's not going to work for them. So yeah, knowing what the reinforcement is, starting small. And the one other thing that I would add into that is making sure that whatever behavior you're trying to do, you're going to want to reduce what we refer to as response effort. So, you know, if it's mm-hmm. significantly harder to start this new routine than to not do it, you're going to get a lot of friction and yeah. a lot of pushback from your environment to complete this. And there's a lot of strategies that you can put in place to reduce that friction, right? Mm-hmm. So this, another one with eating healthier, getting chips is so much easier than spending 15 minutes making a salad.
Yeah. No
it's
kidding.
Just facts of life, you know? So knowing about those things and saying, okay, well, if I want to have a salad for lunch instead of chips, I'll make it the night before. So yeah. the friction mm-hmm. in the moment when I have to make this choice is equal, mm-hmm. right? It's not yeah. harder to make a salad, just as easy to take it out of the fridge as it is to get my chips, right? Mm-hmm. One that I can't remember where I heard it, but one for working out, which I really liked, is someone would fall asleep in their workout clothes. So it was more effort to change yeah. out of their workout clothes than it was to just work out right away. And that's I so love funny. That example.
Yeah. That's great.
It yeah. just sort of sets you up for success. Yeah. yeah which is I just really that. A nice way to do it. Yeah.
And that's a great, yeah. I like the way you phrase that actually, like if we're thinking about reducing, you know, as we might technically say, reduce the response effort, reducing the friction. I love that. That's such a great everyday way to say that, thinking about what is less challenging or at least equally as challenging as engaging in the behavior we don't want to do. But at least matching that, if not making it easier. So reducing the friction. That's great.
Yeah.
So yeah, you just spoke a bit about reinforcement and consequences and such. So let's also talk a bit about, you know, reinforcement and then the flip side of punishment. And just before you get into that, just for listeners, I'll be really clear that when we're talking about punishment, we're not talking about what we necessarily think as punitive or in, you know, everyday language of aversive things like a verbal reprimand from one person to another or removal of privileges or something like that. It can be those things. But I just want to say, you know, so listeners understand that we're talking about a technical term that means whatever that consequence is, the behavior goes down versus increasing behavior. Like we've talked about eating salad, that's increasing behavior, or working out, increasing behavior. But we're talking about punishment yeah. makes a behavior go down or reduced. So if we're going to be talking about that, can you describe a little bit about how reinforcement and punishment might show up in our everyday lives with some other examples there?
Yeah, for sure. So as you said, reinforcement is just anything that increases a behavior. So we have sort of two streams that are important to know about, both for reinforcement and punishment, but there's two different ways that we can get reinforcement. So there's the positive reinforcement. So we're adding that thing on, as you said, or you can remove something to make something reinforcing, right? So, you know, an example of adding something onto after a behavior in order to make it reinforcing, if you tell a joke and someone laughs, right? Their right. laughter is being added into that situation. Their laughter is mm-hmm. the addition that is reinforcing. And then you're more likely to tell that same joke to the next friend that you see, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe that becomes an ongoing inside joke that you repeat over and over with that person, mm-hmm. right? It's really increasing your behavior because they laugh. Same thing, if someone compliments your cooking at a family gathering, that compliment was added after the behavior, mm-hmm. and you might be much more likely to either make that same dish or to make more dishes for your family because it was really reinforcing for you to get that compliment, you know. And it can also be something that's more internal, right? So I drink coffee every morning because there's added energy. Mm-hmm. It is really reinforcing to have my seventh or eighth cup by noon, you know? It's really great. And then on the flip side, you can also have something removed and have that become reinforcing. So for example, you say thank you more often, which is the behavior to avoid conflicts with your partner, right? So you're trying to avoid something that's reinforcing your thank you behavior, or setting out your child's clothes the night before to avoid the amount of time you need to spend helping them in the morning, right? So you're increasing their independence. You're increasing the behavior of setting out their clothes to avoid more prep time in the morning, you know, or sharing more during conversations to avoid awkward silences, right? So there's a lot of different ways that we incorporate reinforcement, and it comes up a lot in social relationships as well. You know, so much of how we interact is just based on, did we get something from that interaction, or are we trying to avoid a particular type of interaction? And, you know, reinforcement works in both of those directions.
Yeah, I think those are great examples. And like you said earlier, that reinforcement has so much to depend, depends so much on the person themselves. And, you know, maybe saying something in public for someone and getting attention is actually punishing for somebody who don't like that social attention, or other people, they love it and they tell a joke and they get tons of attention and love it. So yeah, I think that's a great point, because there's so many everyday situations, moment to moment, we can think, you know, is that reinforcing or is that punishing for me?
And yeah, and I feel that for, I mean, by and large, you know, the reason that there's social standards is because as humans, we usually tap into this, right? Mm-hmm. And we all are able to, for the most part, to a degree, read other people and identify what's reinforcing them or what's punishing them. And we change our behavior. And that's why we become closer with certain people, because we remove the things that are upsetting to them and we add in reinforcement. And sort of where behavior analysts come in is, just as you said, sometimes what you think is a reinforcer is actually a punisher. And what you think is a punisher is actually a reinforcer. So, you know, often when you have someone come in or you're hiring someone to come in, it's when the intuitive answer isn't there. There's something that's misaligned that now it's hard to figure out. Because by and large, you know, as humans, we identify these antecedents and reinforcers without knowing it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I'm thinking a little bit about, well, we've kind of talked about punishment, but could you maybe now, and you gave some great examples for reinforcement, could you also give some examples for punishment and what that can look like? So what makes behaviors go down and how does that look different for different humans?
Yeah, great. So same thing, punishment is just anything that decreases the behavior. So there's no one thing. It's not spanking or verbal reprimands or saying no to someone. It's just whatever happens to decrease your behavior, really. And it depends on the environment. So positive punishment is when you're adding something to make a behavior decrease. So going back to a humor example, this might be someone's offended response to a joke. So the behavior is the same, but instead of that person laughing, maybe they scowl at you, or maybe they say, like, that was really inappropriate. And that's going to reduce that particular joke behavior, right? Maybe you try it out on a couple other people and you get the same response each time. It's going to keep going down. It's going to keep going down. So that's the other thing to remember with any sort of consequence, reinforcement and punishment. Sometimes it is a one and done, but often you need to meet that multiple times to actually change your behavior. And for habit formation, again, that's important to know, because you can't just be reinforced once a lot of the time and be like, cool, I have this habit for the rest of my life. You know, it's really building over time. Sorry, bit of a tangent, but other positive punishments.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so other things that might be added on is, you know, if you get the additional feeling of being sick after eating some bad sushi, right? That's going to punish that behavior. And again, often with food aversion, it is a one and done type of situation, but maybe you go back to that restaurant and try some different menu options. And then you meet that same punisher of, you know, the added feeling of being sick. And so over time you stop going. Or a friend rolls their eyes when you complain to them. So you slowly complain to them less and less. Yeah. So those are the positive punishments. They can be really anything. For negative punishment, same as negative reinforcement, you're removing something, right? So this time you're removing something to decrease a behavior instead of removing something to increase that behavior. So for example, if you're talking about, let's say, the Real Housewives of New Jersey to your husband and he walks away, that might be really punishing. Him removing himself is punishing, right? Mm-hmm. And so you've lost this stimulus. You've lost this person in conversation. So maybe you keep trying to bring it up because it's really interesting for you to talk about. But when he keeps walking away time after time, you're like, maybe I'm not going to talk about this particular show with him anymore. And it punishes that behavior. And this can, again, in other social contexts, if you make a very opinionated comment and people are removing their attention from you, and maybe they turn and talk to someone else and just they had a blank stare, they're not giving you any feedback in terms of, you know, adding that was inappropriate, but maybe they just turn away and they talk to someone else. And that's going to punish that opinionated comment if it's punishing for you, of course. Depends on the person. In this particular scenario, that might be punishing for you.
I love those examples. I love the social examples because I think we can all relate to those. And it's happening day to day. It's not even, you know, parent to child or partner to partner. It can be, you know, with friends and coworkers. You know, it's in any situation we can see these social examples happening. That's great. So moving on a little bit, now we've thought about how behavior analysis applies in our day-to-day lives, especially these social situations. Now, what are some, shifting gears a bit, what are some novel applications right now of ABA that are outside of that realm of autism that are you're finding really interesting right now and kind of promising for the growth of the field, I suppose, and applications of behavior analysis?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many different applications, right? You know, part of behavior analysis being in everyday life is it sort of applies to pretty much anything in terms of making systemic changes. And I think that's the most interesting direction that the field can go in right now is making more systemic changes and using behavior analysis to look at things like prison reform. You know, how can we look at the antecedents and the behaviors and the consequence and the setting events to help these prisoners, you know, turn their lives around, be fully reformed so that when they go back into the community, they're able to live productive, fulfilled lives and not potentially fall into situations that could be problematic for them again. You know, also applying behavior analysis for any at-risk communities and schools. So, you know, before we get into this awful cycle of sometimes these at-risk communities are getting filtered through the prison system, start early on and, you know, figure out, okay, what setting event is causing all of these antecedents to cause this particular behavior with this whole community of people? And being able to change that could make a huge difference in society and specifically in the lives of those individuals who, because of the setting events, they are surviving the best way that they can. And unfortunately, that might be incongruous with the law. You know, it's always important to consider those. Another one, which is sort of in a different direction, but looking at environmentally conscious behavior, you know, and how
that's
can we
a really
use,
interesting one.
Yeah. Using applied behavior analysis for that and thinking about, you know, how can we shape people's behavior by looking at what's currently triggering non-environmentally conscious behavior? How can we switch that to cue the conscious behavior and what's going to be reinforcing it? And this is something that I noticed actually as soon as I moved to Vancouver, because it's so environmentally conscious here compared to where I grew up. And you can see the cues everywhere. And I can very clearly see this system of, you know, I got my coffee. So now I have some things for the paper recycling, some things for the plastic recycling, and then potentially some garbage as well, depending on how I got that coffee. And you have all these visual cues, which are your antecedent to throw things away. And they're staggered in a way that considers response effort.
Right.
So you're able to throw away things easier. And I notice in my own behavior, if I'm at a park that doesn't have that trash system, I go through a short battle internally of, do I really want to carry this in my backpack all the way home and then sort it in my own recycling? Right. By considering that response effort in a citywide system, you can really change that behavior and say, well, if we put it at every single park, they're not just going to throw it out in the trash. And then there's the social pressure when it becomes really normal. You could be punished for just throwing it in the garbage because you have people saying, why are you doing that? There's recycling right there. And you get a whole system going. So, you know, applying that in so many different directions.
Those are great. Like, you know. Yeah, like society level, like group population yep. level examples. Yeah, it's really exciting, actually, that this, that behavior science can apply it to groups of people, really. And I mean, and also down to the individual level of you doing your recycling. But yeah, it is really exciting, that grand scale, I suppose. Now, thinking about your personal habits and behaviors, is there anything that you have established in your own life using behavior analytic principles, would you say?
Definitely. So I would say vast majority of my social habits are probably informed by behavior analysis, either intentionally or unintentionally, as behavior principles tend to work. So I guess socially, you know, I'm trying to apply ABA right now into specific social goals that I have, right? So especially with like Zoom fatigue and all these other things going on, I've noticed that my own behavior has changed, where sometimes I'm not fully attending to a conversation anymore, right? And that's one of those behaviors where it doesn't really align with my own values. I would really like to be able to attend to each word someone is saying. So, you know, right now I'm trying to fit that into a behavior analysis model and change it. So thinking about, you know, what is my goal and setting that as, you know, well, I want to be able to maintain, let's say, a 2-hour Zoom conversation with a friend and not mind wander, you know, and I set that goal because I know with the rules of setting events that it's going to be impossible for me to just set a goal of, I will pay attention to 100% of words, 100% of time, regardless of how much sleep I got the night before, regardless of if I just finished work, you know, I need to think about all those things. So, you know, setting this goal of, you know, when I'm in the right frame of mind and all my setting events are aligning, when this person's talking, I'm going to pay attention. And if I notice that I'm mind wandering, I need a strategy, right? I need a new behavior to keep me on track. So reiterating to someone what they just said so I can make sure my brain processes it, and using that as a cue to get me closer to my 2-hour goal, let's say.
Right.
And then the consequence is that I get to be in the loop with the conversation. I don't accidentally say something that I should have had more information about, and then I have to backtrack, right? So there's tons of reinforcement systems going on. And in that particular situation, a lot of it is negative reinforcement. I'm trying to avoid the situation of saying something and then being a little embarrassed because I'm like, oh, that doesn't actually align with the one word that they said in the previous sentence that I missed. That was really key to this information or to this comment that I was going to say. So yeah. So in terms of social, that's one of the things that I think I'm using behavior analysis for at the moment. Another one that I usually do is just in terms of my work setup. I also use some principles of behavior analysis. So, you know, especially in my line of work, I have a lot of staggered appointments where I'm going in person. And then there's a lot of paperwork in between, and no 2 days look the same. So creating a routine is really difficult for me. So one of the things that I've focused on is thinking about, okay, well, I need to make sure that I'm meeting reinforcement on a very regular schedule in order to maintain some sense of routine and some sense of habitual habits. So if I have, let's say, 20 admin tasks to do for the week, I will actually write out which ones I'm going to do on Monday, which ones I'm doing on Tuesday, which ones on Thursday, what's on Friday, and, you know, managing all of it between these different appointments. Because to finish Monday and say, okay, I got these 4 tasks done, and I can check it off and say, yes, I did it today, I accomplished all of my goals, and now I get to go, you know, make dinner or talk to my partner or whatever it is, that's really reinforcing for me. But I noticed early on, like in undergrad as well, if I just had 20 tasks and I didn't structure them into the week, at the end of Monday, even if I did the same amount of work, just saying, oh my gosh, I have 16 more things to do. I have no idea how I'm going to get this done. It wasn't reinforcing, and I would just sort of get overwhelmed. So breaking it down into a system where I meet reinforcement regularly for accomplishing my tasks is just one way that I've incorporated that into my daily life.
That's great. Yeah. Both of those are so applicable, like for work, but also the social. Yeah. Now you have very thoughtfully structured this together. Do you have any resources for families or individuals, I suppose, because we're talking about all kinds of different examples, but if they are interested in learning more about practical applications of ABA in their daily life and how to use behavior analysis?
Yeah. So I think the first one that I would recommend, the environment is honestly sort of your greatest tool. You know, you're able to sort of process all the different components and think about your setting events and your antecedents and your behaviors and your consequences. Apply that into your environment as much as you can, or set aside time to really analyze the characters in your favorite TV show. You know, some of the idiosyncrasies that your partner has, watching your child and figuring out why does this thing always trigger this behavior, mm-hmm. but not this one, right? And why did they, you know, clean their room when I asked yesterday, but they're not cleaning it today? What setting event changed? And really starting to look at all these different things. You know, why was the candy effective today, but it's not effective yesterday? You know, and really starting to get to a point where you're thinking compassionately, you're asking that why, you're understanding that every behavior has a purpose and yeah. there's a function to it, and making sure that you can predictably predict yeah. someone's behavior, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because we can always predict something once or twice, but if we can do it reliably, mm-hmm. then that shows that we really understand which components are in play and what exactly is going on for that person or for yourself if you're changing mm-hmm. your own behavior. That's yeah, so great. I think yeah. environment would be the first one. In terms of a more tangible answer, specifically with habit formation, there's actually an app that I found recently, which is all based in behavior science, which is just so cool as a behavior analyst nerd, but it's this app called Fabulous. So in this app, it helps you create very manageable goals for creating habits, and it can separate them for you into your morning routine. And it helps you build Amazing. A morning routine that will set you up for success for the rest of your day. Amazing. And then, you know, you can slowly go into creating afternoon routines and night routines, and it's all based in behavior science and behavior analysis. So wow, considering things so cool. like what's your reinforcer, considering mm-hmm. things like response effort, considering things like what's going to cue that behavior. Can you create a chain where as soon as you see your coffee machine, you start up your coffee and then you take your vitamins, but you're also going to drink water, which is another goal because you have to take those vitamins. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and how can you create it in a way where you get to a point where your habit is no longer thoughtful.
Right.
It's the same as breathing. You just go through this whole thing, and it makes it very fluid, and it tells you why you should do each thing. And it tells you why you should slow down and build up slowly to make sure that you don't get overwhelmed and drop your habits. So,
and what's it called?
Yeah, I would highly recommend that. It's called Fabulous.
Okay, great. So,
and it was created by some researchers. It was created by researchers at Duke University, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. So
very cool.
Yeah, it was just a really great tool. Yeah.
I'm going to check that out myself. That sounds fascinating. I find mm-hmm. apps. Yeah. I mean, we have our smartphones around all the time. So an app can be a great way to cue behavior, just notifications and such. And if our phone's with us, it can guide us. That sounds also quite individualized considering it's an app. So that's amazing. Very cool. Now, before we wrap up, I just had a couple other like quick questions for you. So just three things. So first of all, what is mm-hmm. the best advice you have ever received?
I would say every parent is doing their best.
That's great. Yeah, that mm-hmm. is so important, I think, for us as practitioners to keep in mind. And I really love how you mentioned earlier that understanding that there's a reason behind every behavior has made you more compassionate. I think that links in really nicely with that everybody is trying their best and there's a reason for everything. And we don't need to mm-hmm. Force things or be judgmental about it. We can just try to understand what's going on in a compassionate manner. What about a resource? I guess you just mentioned the Fabulous app, but what about a concrete, mm-hmm. any other like resource or internet resource or book or tool that you'd recommend for families?
Yeah. So have you ever used Everyday Speech, that website?
I have. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good I one. Am a okay. huge fan of Everyday Speech, specifically for their social skills videos, which have just been a total game changer during the pandemic in terms of helping some of my clients work on social skills. So this resource, the reason that I love it so much is they explain the social roles that mm-hmm. you're going to be learning about in that video. And then they go through a role play of what happens when you violate the social rule and what happens when you follow the social rule. So you can see the two routes. And then using this in conjunction with a real life role play mm-hmm. with a client really helps solidify that, because then they can see it, they can watch the model, and then they can act it out, and you can get them to that point where it's very fluent for them mm-hmm. to engage in social rule behaviors. Yeah.
Yeah. I think what I love about those videos is that when they pause it and they annotate the video as well, sometimes with like a thought bubble to show what that person's thinking. So it's not just a video model, it's like a video model plus, because it has all those explanations on there, which is really nice. And like you mentioned, the example and then what not to do as well. How about a book? Exactly. Do you have any books that you'd recommend for families?
So I would say, similar to my environment question or answer before, I think the best book for parents to look through is actually their own journals. Again, going back to, I mean, there's 1,000 different books out there depending on what parents are looking for. And I think any book that comes from an autistic voice is always really helpful for understanding their child. But I think for understanding your own child, going back through journals that you've written and looking at, you know, maybe if you wrote about a really difficult interaction with your child, going back and saying, can I look at this now through a behavioral lens? And can I figure out what actually caused this behavior? What setting events were going on? Did we have a birthday party earlier that day and there was a sugar crash happening? Was, you know, there an issue with the reinforcement? Had I promised them something and then I didn't end up delivering it and I just didn't think about it? So going through and actually trying to analyze what happened in all those scenarios, because 2020 is, or hindsight is 2020. And I think that can be a really viable tool that you can then use with your specific family, your specific child in the future.
Amazing.
Because every child's going to be different.
Yeah. That's a fantastic idea. I love that advice. Just as a thought to reconsider it in the behavioral lens and asking that why question, because that really is what we do as behavior analysts, is trying to understand why through that behavioral lens. So thank you so much, Caitlin. I think you've provided so many interesting, super applicable, practical examples from everyday life for anybody that we can all relate to, especially those social examples. So thank you so much for kind of just talking about behavior analysis and using behavior science in day-to-day life and understanding the world around us and our own behaviors through that lens. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Erica.
The comments and views expressed in this podcast do not constitute or replace contractual behavior analytic consultation or professional advice. Views expressed are solely the perspective of the speaker and do not represent the views or position of their colleagues, employer, or other associates. Please seek out a behavior analyst through the BACB website if you would like to receive further behavior consultation. Until next time, take care.